for this week's Parsha, for Parsha's Vayesha. Please, guys, finish it up. We got a smaller group tonight. You got to take advantage. Okay? So, in Vayesha, I thought there are four stories, right? Anybody can look at the Parsha and just see four neat stories. Number one, we have Yosef and his brothers, right? That's the beginning. Yosef tells on them. His brothers go ahead and sell him. That's the first incident, which goes on for a long part, the first part of the Parsha. The next part of the Parsha is then afterwards how Yehuda and Tamar have this whole story, a very cryptic story as they go. But that's the next segment, chunk of the Parsha. The next one then is Yosef and the wife of his master, Potiphar, when he's down in Mitzrayim already, how Yosef rises to power in the house, and then he has this whole drama with that attempted adulteress. And the final part of the Parsha, the fourth part, is Yosef in jail. Right? When Yosef is interpreting the dreams of the Sar Mashkim and the Sar Ofim at the end of the Parsha. Very neat. Four stories, which are long stories, detailed stories, and there's a ton to get from them. My goal was tonight is instead of us taking one long essay Ramban, you know, where he goes and brings down one reason and he takes him to task, a little bit we'll have some of that on Rashi here, but not as much. I want to go through them a little bit quicker this week so we can see more and just see his greatness in Pashtunis. Right? He's going to ask questions, which I hope that at the end of this year, if not already, you guys, when you start reading that, Alex came up to me today and asked me some great shot questions. Just going through Chumash, Rashi, reading the Pesukim. One of my Rebbeim always told me that a good way to do it is to read it as if you don't know the story. Right? It's hard to do because we all know these stories since we've been in kindergarten. And we've heard these stories time and time again. But if you look at it as if you don't know what the outcome is, pretend you're Yosef, pretend you're the brothers, you don't know what's going to happen, you'll start picking up on the questions that are so weird. Why did the Chumash phrase it this way? Or when Rashi says this, what could he possibly mean? That Medrash is very bizarre. And you'll start to realize what they're really picking up on. So hopefully tonight we'll show four incidents. We're going to hit the first four. If we have time, we're going to do a quick. We're going to get through four Ramans, one from each one of these stories that I singled out, to try to show that the Ramans like saying, wait a second, that didn't make sense. If you stop and just think about it, something's off here. And then you'll see his Pashtunis brilliantly coming to the forefront. Okay? First one, about Yosef and his brothers. First, he starts off by quoting Rashi. The pasuk says, "V'inei nar es b'nei bilha," and Yosef was a child amongst the children of the b'nei bilha. What does that mean? That he was acting like a child. You know, he would play with his eyes, he'd fix his hair. You know, he'd try to make himself look nice. Young kids are into their brand name clothing and fix their hair a lot more. But as they get older, they start to care a little bit less. Es b'nei bilha. What does that mean with b'nei bilha? Klomar v'rugl es b'nei bilha. L'fishayu achin mevaznosan humakarvan. Rashi's pshat. What does it mean that he hung out with the b'nei bilha? Yosef was a paragon of virtue. Yosef was somebody who stood up for the underdog. And what did he do? He saw the four B'nai Shvachot all being made fun of by the six children of Leah. And he said, hey, you know, stand up for their rights. And he would take care of them. And Rashi continues. When the pasuk says that Yosef spoke Lashon Hara, he went and he conveyed bad messages to their father about the brothers. Who's that referring to? Not the B'nai Shvachot. He's going and he's telling on those same six, you know, tough guys, the sons of Leah. So Yosef was somebody who stood up for the underdog. That's how Rashi sets it up. Okay, that's nice. Ramban jumps in. Okay, hold on one second. Question number one. Bim Kane. Lama lo hitzilu b'nei ha-shvachos. Wait a second. If that's really what this pasuk is telling us, how come the b'nei ha-shvachos didn't save him? Yosef was best friends with them. Yosef covered for them. He stood up for their rights. He told their father on the other ones. And yet, the B'nai HaShvachos, these four, had no hakaras hatov to Yosef whatsoever. Yosef still was almost killed because of the brothers. Where were they? Vim kein lama lo hetziluhu B'nai HaShvachos. Why did they save him? Who ohev osam? He loved them. Umakarvim, and he would come bring them close. Umagi lovev achim eviz yonam. He would tell on the brothers. So, question one, pshat. If really it means that Yosef hung out with them and they were his friends, why didn't they get his back in return? V'im Nehemar, now the Ramban tries to say, okay, so maybe you would say that Sheyiru Menachem, they were afraid. You know, Yehuda, we know how strong Yehuda was. Shimon and Levi just destroyed a whole city of Shechem. Maybe they were afraid of the brothers. So the Ramban shoots that down. That's a stupid protection for Rashi. Two reasons why that doesn't make sense. Number one, maybe you guys would think of this. Number one, V'nehem Dalit. Still, the B'nai HaShvachos were four. V'Ruvein Imahim. After all, we know Ruvein was really on Yosef's side. Ruvein was willing to save Yosef. Ruvein did not want Yosef to die. V'Yosef Atzmo, that's six. And we're not talking about Binyamin. So it's already a six on five. So at the very least, Yosef and his brothers round number them. And moreover, the second reason why you can't give this defense. V'ah ki lo yavo iman v'mochama. Come on. Come on. What are we talking about here? What about the sons of Yaakov? They're not actually going to, if they see that they have a real war, you know, maybe if it's Yosef, who they think is out to get them, and they think Yosef is like the Esav or Yishmael character in the family of Yaakov, So maybe him, they're willing to send him to death. But to start out an all-out civil war, if the brothers really would have stood up for Yosef versus them, they wouldn't have done that. They would kill some of the Bnei Yaakov in a war, tear the family apart. Of course not. So therefore, the Ramban doesn't think that's a good defense. So the question is, if it really means that Yosef was good friends with the Bnei Yisrael, why didn't they stand up for him? Don't tell me it was because of fear. That's ridiculous. Moreover, Ba'ot, end of the second to last line. Ba'ot, ki nira because of ki kulam hiskimu b'mechiraso. If you just read the psukim, does it sound like it was just Shimon and Levi that were involved? Maybe Rashi turns it into them into the, being the ringleaders. But the simple shot in the psukim is that all the brothers, maybe except for Reuven and Judah had his saving grace, but all the brothers together decided to go ahead and sell Yosef. So don't tell me that really some of them were on his side. You see that they were even willing to sell him, not just they didn't stand up for him. They even betrayed him. So clearly that can't be shot that he was a young boy amongst the sons of Bnei Bilhah. That meant he stuck up for Bnei Bilhah. And moreover, Avaladas Rebel Satan, when he says, Rashi, you're gone anyhow, because there's the first medrash in Bereshit Rabbah, which says, Al Kulam Hayamotzi Adiba, that Yosef was speaking bad, not just about who, not just about the Bnei Leah, but even the Bnei Shvachos. So for three reasons, Rashi can't be right. They should have stuck up for him. Moreover, they shouldn't have betrayed him, as the psukim imply. And finally, their medrash itself says that Yosef spoke bad about not just the brothers from the Bnei Leah, but all the brothers. So, what is Pshat? What does it mean that he was a nar amongst the children of Bnei Bilhah? And here you're going to see some brilliant pashtunas here. So his first explanation about Nachal Meinah, he just is dealing with what it means that he was a nar. So he's just explaining that the pasuk is, first of all, he was a child, and he would also graze the sheep along with his brothers. Okay, so that's how he explained it. He was just a child, and he would graze the sheep the same way his brothers would go and graze the sheep. But now he develops that point much more deeply over here. Oh, she, in the next paragraph, who Moshe Acher Aim. Let's skip to the end of the line there. Yomar, Kihu Nar, he was a boy. Now the fact that he calls him a boy is interesting, guys. What was Rashi's unspoken question? When Rashi said he's a boy, so Rashi said, oh, you know, he used to play with his hair, he had his eyelashes. What was bothering Rashi? You tell me. Right? There's a book even called What's Bothering Rashi? Every time you see Rashi say something, you have to say, what was he coming to explain? So what was bothering Rashi? The Pasuk calls him a nar, and Rashi explains he acted like a child. He was immature. Exactly, that's Rashi's answer. But what's the question Rashi has? Wait, exactly. He was 17 years old, right? You guys are what, 19, 18, whatever, something like that, right? Do you consider yourself kids? No, you think you're adults. You're here in Israel, you have independence, right? So adults might, but it's strange to call him just a child, right? So Rashi says, yeah, he's a child because he acted like a child, even though he wasn't actually a child. So Rashi's saying he dressed like the part, and he cared about his looks like a child. Fine. But the Ramban has a different approach. The Ramban says he was a na'ar because his father treated him differently. He was cared for in a different way. What did the father do? Here's how the Ramban ties na'ar and Ibnei Bilhah together. He says that his father, who Ibnei Bilhah, Ibnei Zilpah, Nishay Aviv Tamid, he was constantly with them. Why? Because he was such a young kid, the father said to the sons of the maidservants, take care of your little brother. Babysit him. Since Yosef was still the youngest amongst them, so he said, babysit your brother. And then, guess what? Yosef was the little tag-along with these brothers. And he would tell the bad things about who? Not about the Bnei Leah, just the opposite. About the Bnei Shvachos, who we were always forced to babysit him, and hated him for two reasons. They resented the fact that they had to babysit him. And they resented the fact, moreover, that he would go and speak badly about them because he was always hanging out with them. Hey, how come you guys looked at that? How come you guys did this? Right? He was upset at them. They were upset at him, I'm sorry, for always going and telling their bad things over to their father. So the Ramban addresses now why they hated Yosef. Because, after all, they didn't want to have to watch after him. And he would always speak bad about them to their father. What about the six children of Leah? Why did they hate Yosef then? That's for a totally separate reason. Here you were always thinking, or at least I was always thinking my whole life, that they all just hate him because they were jealous. Just no, these ones wouldn't have been jealous of him. They were clearly on a lower, you know, echelon of society that they were the Bnei HaShvachos, not the Bnei HaGviros. They were lower. That's in fact why Yaakov said, you guys have to babysit him and not you guys, not the Bnei Leah. So they wouldn't have been jealous of him. They just hated him because he always spoke bad about them. Why did the Bnei Leah hate him? For the reason we were all familiar with. Because they were jealous. Not because Yosef spoke bad about them. Yosef never hung out with them to know what they did bad. But rather, their mom tells us, because they were jealous of Yosef, since Yosef was clearly the favorite child of their father. And their mom ends off by saying, Al derech pshat, Why do we call him a Nar? Not just because he was, you know, had to be babysat, but it's not even a question in the first place. You know, I misled you. I mean, it's what Rashi was coming to address, and Rabban himself. But really, Nar is sometimes used just in relation to other people. For example, the pasuk calls Yoshua a Nar when he was, I think, 52 years old, right? Something like that. Obviously, none of us. Even if you think a 17-year-old kid might be a kid. But Yeshua was not a kid. There are other examples where we'll sometimes refer to somebody as a Nar, but it depends on context. You know, your grandfather will think your father is a child, even though he might be in his 40s or whatever. Yes, question. Right, so you're saying that clearly they all did hang out together sometimes. That's definitely possibly true. But meaning, let's say that was when they would all do their work together. I hear your question. But maybe when they were all working, they would all graze Yaakov's sheep. They didn't have their own sheep. They all grazed Yaakov's sheep. But let's say during their downtime, who was the one to take Yosef to the candy store? Who was the one who had to make sure Yosef was doing something in his free time? It was their job. Okay, that's the first Ramban on the first one. Next story, Yehuda and Tamar. Now, there happens to be one Ramban which I was going to put on here. I didn't put on here. If you guys want to see, it's probably one of the most important Rambans in the Torah, but I didn't put it on because it's too esoteric. It has to do all with Gilgulim, meaning reincarnations of souls. The Ramban thinks that's a yesod to understanding Schar V'Onesh. In his Shara Gemul, that's reward and punishment. In his Shara Gemul, which is a whole sefer dedicated to that, he also wrote a parish on Eo, which is all about Schar V'Onesh. He takes that as like basically the answer to understanding Schar V'Onesh. It's much too esoteric for me to truly understand or to properly convey, but if anybody wants to see it, it's on the mitzvah of Yibam that happens with Yehuda. But a different Ramban I want to focus on here is quoting Rashi also in the beginning. He explains, Ki Omar, Kolomar, Hayadogal Zabakash. This is when Yehuda was going and telling Tamar, go back home until, you know, Shayla's old enough to marry you. So Rashi says he was just pushing her off, right? She wanted to marry the third son after Aaron Onan died. So she wanted to go and marry Shayla. And Yehuda said, no, wait, go home until he's old enough. So Rashi says, really, he just didn't want her to marry him. Why not? There's a Gemara which tells us that it's usur for a woman whose first two husbands died for somebody else to go ahead and marry her. It has ramifications for Yibam, that somebody does not have to do Yibam in that scenario. It's much more complex. I'm oversimplifying and probably saying things wrong. But that's what Rashi's referring to over here. That really, Yehuda was just trying to push her away because he didn't want Shayla to go and marry her. Because if Shayla would marry her, he'd be doing something wrong, and maybe Shayla would also die the same way the older two brothers died. Ravon's like, wait a second, though. Does that make any sense? Lo yadati, lama yisbayish Yehuda, why would Yehuda, the Gadol Hador, have to come and, like, you know, push her away and, like, gently tell her, like, oh, no, you know, I'll call you back. Why don't Yehuda say, look, I'm sorry, but the halacha is you can't marry your son, my son, so I'm going to send you home. I'm afraid that you might kill him, basically, and go away. Right, so now we might say, because that's not so sensitive. But still, he's just assuming, like, it was obvious that Yehuda could have just explained it to her nicely, and that would have been that. So why would Yehuda have to go and get onto this whole trick just to lie to her, and that would cause her to have to do a whole trick back to dress up as a Zona so that way Yehuda would be with her? Why didn't Yehuda just tell her to go home? How could that be pshat? And moreover, if you look at the end of the next line, additionally, why did Yehuda get so upset at Tamar when it turned out that she was pregnant? Clearly she had slept with somebody. Why was Yehuda so upset? If he was really trying to get rid of her and told her to go home, so then she did the right thing. You know what? Who cares? Let her get married to somebody else. Let her sleep with whoever she wants. Clearly, Yehuda wanted her to one day come back into his home. Yehuda was waiting for her to grow up to marry Shayla. At which point, Rashi's totally wrong. Rashi thinks Yehuda said, you can't marry Shayla right now. Sorry. Because really, he's just trying to get rid of her forever because he doesn't want her to marry Shayla. The Ramban's saying, and the fact that Yehuda got upset at her for not waiting for Shayla and instead sleeping with somebody else clearly shows that Yehuda wanted her for Shayla. Yehuda was hoping one day that indeed, as he told her, Shayla will grow up and you'll marry Shayla. Therefore, when she violated that by sleeping with somebody else, he got very upset at her and told her to die. So, just in the pshat of the psukim, how could Rashi fit with what goes on later on? And finally, v'rachoku, and he says, it doesn't also make sense, this whole idea, that he thought maybe she died. Sorry, maybe his sons died because of the fact that she was killing them, and that's where that halacha is based off of. Clearly, he must have known that it was because his sons did a terrible avera, and that's why they died. Instead, therefore, the Ramban suggests a different pshat entirely. He says that no, really Yehuda wanted her for his son, for Shelah. However, this fits back with what we were just talking about. That depends how old you are, based off different people's eyes. Now, Yehuda looked at his youngest son, and he said he's a baby. And you know what? He was. He was still under 12 years old. He was just a kid. But Tamar was so impatient to be with somebody in Yehuda's family, so that way she could have the children she knew she was destined to have Malchus base David come out of her, that she was so desperate that she saw that he was already old enough that he technically could have gotten married. But in our day and age, certainly, he's just a kid. And Yehuda also, when Yehuda's eyes, says, you know what? I'm going to wait till he's older. And the Ramban adds another nice little point. Yehuda recognized his mistake. Why did Aaron Onan die? Because they acted inappropriately. Because they were just kids. Kids have stronger desires than people that they get older. And the little kids, they didn't know how to control these desires. They messed up. Yehuda said, I married them off to this beautiful woman. They didn't know how. They tried to preserve her beauty by doing something wrong. And instead, they died for it. If I marry off my last kid, who's still just a baby, 11, 12 years old, the same thing's going to happen. I don't want to lose my third son. He said, I'm going to wait this time until he gets a little bit older. This way he's more mature. And moreover, he'll listen to his father's mussar. His father will be able to instruct him and guide him in the life of Torah. Somebody who's 20 years old is much more mature and in control of his desires than somebody who is 13 or 14 years old. And therefore, you would have waited until he was older so he can marry her off to Tamar. However, Tamar was so excited by marrying to Yehuda's family that she couldn't wait any longer. She said, ah, he must have been lying to me. He's not going to take me back. And that's why she had to hatch this whole plot. However, what we see from this story is a totally different perspective. Rashi says that he was really just trying to get rid of her. Yehuda, on the flip side, really wanted her. And he wanted her to be the mother of his grandchildren. However, he was just trying to do it in a wise fashion, as the Pesukim later on indicate. Yes.
So why is Tamar rewarded for this behavior?
You're saying, technically, didn't she make a misjudgment? Yehuda had one cheshbon, right? Yehuda was thinking one thing. So, you know what? Maybe she was right. But at least we understand what Yehuda's rationale was. Yehuda was being very cautious here. Yehuda's like, I had two children die. I'm not going to make that same mistake again. Maybe Shelah was greater than them, and maybe, you know what, Tamar, maybe Hashem wanted this to happen, that Tamar and Yehuda would be the ones and not Yehuda's sons. Yehuda was obviously a lot older and more in control of himself. Third story, Yosef and the wife of his master. Okay, over here, just a simple shock question, right? Everybody has to deal with the fact that she was holding Yosef's clothing, right? Rashi already addressed the fact that if she's holding Yosef's clothing, what does it look like happen? That Yosef tried to rape her? Maybe if she wasn't wearing any clothing, and, you know, or her clothing was torn on the floor or something and she screamed, that would look like there was an attempt to rape. Why was she holding Yosef's clothing, right? She pulled off his clothing, that looks like she tried to seduce him, not the other way around. So just in the story, so Rashi later on tells us that, yeah, that's in fact why his master knew that she wasn't really telling the truth, that he knew that Yosef wouldn't have tried to sleep with her. The facts just didn't add up. The evidence wasn't in her favor. Okay, that's one shot question which has to be addressed. But Ramban's addressing another one, one I had never thought of beforehand. Who do you think was stronger? The 30-year-old, or whatever he was at that point, 22-year-old, I forgot exactly, if you do the right years, I forgot. Right? However old Yosef was, he was a strapping young lad. Clearly, very handsome. That probably means that he was also not just pretty, but also probably pretty physically fit. And here's some girl, some woman, older than him, and again, a woman. Who do you think was stronger? So now it's possible. Maybe she was an Olympian. I don't know, right? But let's assume not. Why didn't Yosef just beat her up? Why didn't Yosef say, get off my clothing, stop trying to hurt me? I'm sorry? That would look very bad, I agree. But at least if he realized that he left evidence in her home, he should have grabbed her arm, pinned her against the wall, pulled away his cloak, and then gone and out. So that way she wouldn't have any evidence to claim him against him, right? So why didn't he do that? The Ramban has a good question. The Ramban addresses it. We'll see in a second, okay? So 2 points are going to be involved here. Number one, V'azov bigdo biyada, l'chavod gvirto. For the honor of his mistress, lo ratza lo tiyem yada b'kocho agadol imena. He didn't want to beat her up. He didn't want to pull it away from her, out of his great strength over her, out of honor for her. V'hesir osama'elav. Therefore, when she was pulling onto his garment, what did he do? He actually slipped off his shirt. Now, I would have told you, Yosef, that was a terrible idea. And look, obviously it backfired on him. He was trying to be nice to her. He didn't want to hit a girl. And he also wanted to get away, as you just suggested. Yes. But what happened? Yosef just slipped off his clothing. He's like, I got to get out of here. And I can't hurt her. So he ran away. And the Huber Osa sorry, Vihi bir osa ki enyach big dobiyada, and then she realized, oh shoot, this does not look good for me, right? Because as we pointed out, the pshat is, if you're holding somebody else's clothing, you pulled it off of him. So she realized, I'm in trouble here. So she said, I have to make up a story quick, because if somebody comes in afterwards and sees I'm holding Yosef's clothing, and Yosef's outside half naked in the street, so then it's going to look bad for me. So she screams. So then everybody runs to her. Why would she scream if she was actually guilty, right? No, she's drawing attention to herself, so it must be she's telling the truth. So she screams, draws attention to herself, and then she explains this whole story that what happened was that he was taking off his own clothing to be with her, right? He was getting ready to try to seduce her. And then she screamed when she saw what he was getting ready to do, and then he ran away in panic. So that was the lie that she concocted, even though it was very, you know, misleading over here. She's the one with his clothing. But she says, no, he was, you know, calmly taking off his clothes. He was ready to do whatever he wanted to me. He knew I couldn't get away. But then I screamed. And then you all came running, and he ran outside because he got afraid, and he left his cloak here. So that was the whole lie that she hatched. And that fits much nicer with the shot of what's going on here. Why would somebody scream if she has everything looking bad against her? No, she had this whole plot. And also, why didn't Yosef beat her up? Because Yosef was being careful out of respect for her. He made a terrible misjudgment. You see what happened. This was not a good thing for him. He should have probably, I would have thought, you see in the retrospect, he should have pushed her away and kept his clothing on. But he was trying to escape successfully, quickly, without looking bad. And then the Ramban even says in the end, and that's why she doesn't say, if you note the language of the pasuk, and here the Ramban has a diuk in the wording. It doesn't say that she claimed, and he left his garment here on purpose, right? Meaning that he took off his clothes to be with me, and he gave them to me. Vayazov would mean, and he did it on purpose, and he gave it to me. Instead, it's vayazav bigdo etzli, and he left his garment by me. Meaning, not like he chose to give it to me. Rather, it was left here because he rushed out, as you said. Fine. Last Yosef story that we have in this week's parsha, Yosef in jail. The Ramban tells us a fascinating point, something that I had never picked on myself either. When Yosef was in jail, and he was seeing the distressed looks on the faces of these two great officers of Yosef, of Paro, what did Yosef do? He walks up to them, he says, how's it going? You know, I see your faces down tonight. Hayaroi, the Ramban tells us, Shiomar akasa v'yishalo sam lemor. The Bazak should have just said, and he spoke to them as follows, and left it at that. Avlaherech, the Bazak goes and tells us this whole story, all the details. Ki ratza l'saper b'shvach Yosef. The Bazak is telling us about the greatness of Yosef. Shayanar, Evan, he was just a kid, and he was a servant in jail. V'shal l'shnei sarim gedolim. And he went and he asked these two great leaders of Pyro, v'heim v'veis adonav, asher sinei oso. And remember, Yosef was in a bad position. Whose jail was he in? Potiphar's own jail. Things were not a comfortable political situation for Yosef to be in. Any wrong move, off with his head. Yet, he sees these two great leaders who, yes, they're in jail at the moment, but who knows? Maybe Paro will take them back, as we see happen with the Sarai Mashkin. And he goes up to them and he says, hey, what's wrong? He wasn't embarrassed to talk to them, which I think is a great musar vort for all of us. But he's going to take something away from here. You know, sometimes you see somebody, you know, who you don't know so well, or somebody, you know, he's much smarter than me, he's much better than me, he doesn't need my help, he doesn't need my chizah. But if you see somebody looking down, don't be afraid to go up to them. Go up to them, ask them what's wrong, ask them how things are going, ask them if they'd like to talk. They might say no, they might ignore and say, who are you? But it can't hurt, even if it's the Rosh Hashiva, even if it's one of your rebbeim. You see that, like, you know, they seem a little bit stressed out that day. I think you see from Yosef here, don't be afraid to ask. And another point that you see also was Yosef's self-confidence. You also see that despite the fact that they were so great, he wasn't afraid of telling them what he thought. Speak your mind. Same thing in Shir. You might have a pshat that you want to say. Okay, so you have to do it respectfully. No, don't be afraid. But, on the flip side, don't be disrespectful. But you see that if you think you know what you're doing, you think you have a good pshat, fight for that pshat. Try to get that pshat out. Say that pshat and don't be afraid. Back down when you realize you're wrong. But over here, Yosef, you see his confidence. He was willing to say what he saw as the MS, despite the fact that, let's say, this could have backfired on him. Same way other things backfired on him. This could have backfired too. When the Sarai Mashkin came out, he said, who is this upshot kid who comes up to me? He thinks that he's able to say whatever he wants to me? Well, I get rid of him. So, he was not afraid. He was willing to go and speak out to them. Now, the final one that I have on here, not for now, we're out of time, but one if you guys want to see, a famous one which relates to Chanukah, V'aborek ein bo mayim, right? That the pasuk says the pit that they put Yosef in was empty. No water in it whatsoever. Okay, fine. What's the deal? Rashi tells us, no water, yes, but there was snakes and scorpions. There were snakes and scorpions. So, Narman has a really strong pshat question on Rashi, And he gives a fascinating answer, which happens to be in line with one of the Ramban's that Alex asked me about, one of the general shitos that the Ramban has in general in this week's parsha. But I will leave that for you guys for homework. Okay, in terms of the Hanukkah thing, if anybody's interested, please let me know. And Amir